a key commercial sector and the president's immigration reform. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. As you've been hearing, President Obama speaks tonight about his plans to change America's immigration rules, executive orders that he believes do not need congressional approval. Perhaps 5 million deportations might be stopped. More details will emerge tonight, but let's spend a moment now on two parts of this with Marketplace reporter Dan Gorenstein. He joins us live. Dan, let's talk about farm workers. What might this mean for them?
Well, the United Farm Workers, after meeting with the president this week, think about 250,000 workers will get protections under the proposal. But as the New York Times reports this morning, they won't be singled out as a protected class because there's no legal justification to protect certain workers but not others, like, they say, hotel workers. And that is an example, David, of the kind of tightrope the president's walking without backing from Congress. As one congressman from New Mexico said, quote, "The president is taking the action he's able to. This is a first step."
So we know when it comes to immigration and employment, one insistent request we hear from businesses is the need for more visas. Are they going to be happy?
Yes and no. Obama's expected to expand a work permit program for foreign graduates of U.S. schools with degrees in science, technology, engineering, math. So it's going to be easier for some companies to fill some high-tech vacancies. At the same time, firms want to be able to use employment visas that have been unused previously. And the Wall Street Journal's reporting that's not going to be included, again, like with the farm workers, for legal reasons. So it's a bit of a mixed bag.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, thank you very much. The American Automobile Association has its holiday travel forecast out this morning. One headline, the principles of economics are at work. Gas prices are lower, so there should be more travel by car. The paradox is traveling by plane. Lower fuel prices have saved the airline industry an estimated $1.6 billion this past year, but airfares have gone up. Marketplace's David Weinberg has the story on how these shifts impact people's holiday travel decisions.
During the holiday season, the vast majority of people travel by car,
usually accounting for about 85 to 90% of all travelers.
Heather Hunter is with AAA. For people taking incredibly long trips or very short trips, the choice to fly or drive is clear.
But it is the medium-length trips, say between 200 and 1,000 miles, where it gets more complicated.
John Lal is the CEO of BeFrugal.com and the creator of the Fly or Drive Calculator, which takes into account lots of factors. Will you need a rental car if you fly? Are you checking bags?
You know, obviously current gas prices, the wear and tear on your car.
Dan Snydowski lives in Seattle. He's been invited to Thanksgiving dinners at his mom's place in Montana and at a friend's house in Portland.
And I still haven't made up my mind as far as if I'm going to travel or if I do, you know, where am I going to go?
Snydowski says flying is out of the question. He can't afford last-minute airfare. So at this point, his decision comes down to spending the holidays with friends or family. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
Now let's do the numbers. The 100-share index in London is down 0.6%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down at the moment. The yield on the 10-year Treasury yield is down at 2.318%. There is this term, digerati, meaning the folks most handy with all that is digital, online, mobile. Visualize for a moment a digerata or a digeratus. How old are you thinking? Teen or 20-something? 30-something with a pork pie hat maybe? But what about retirees? Here to develop this argument from one of our St. Paul studios is Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell. Hello, Chris.
Hello, David.
It's your view that an aging population is and will be increasingly digital.
Yes, because if you think about an aging population that's healthier and educated and wants to stay engaged, they've grown up at the workplace with computers, the cell phone, you know, the things that we associate with the millennials, the, what did you call it, the digerati, Google glasses, wearables, tablets, social media. These are all things that an aging population can take advantage of to improve the quality of life as we enjoy this benefit of increased longevity.
What are you talking, though? Like healthcare stuff in the digital space?
Oh, I think healthcare is extremely important. And the wearables, you put it on your wrist and it monitors, you know, how many steps you've taken and your blood pressure and all other kinds of things. It's not just health. Where is the real excitement about the driverless car? Let me tell you, that's an aging population. People are going to be working longer. They're going to be engaged. The 50-plus population has $3 trillion in buying power, David. So this is a lot more buying power than Depends or denture cream.
You know, before you go, you had sent me an email about this earlier, Chris. You said this amazing thing. Products that cater to older people are ugly. I mean, it's true when you think about it, right? The walker or the orthopedic shoe.
That's right.
I mean, where's the design, right?
That's exactly. There's this phrase that's been around for a long time, universal design. And the notion of universal design is that you make things that are really useful, but they're also aesthetically pleasing. So you're remodeling your home and you're thinking about aging. You want to age in place. You put in a European shower. They're really attractive, but it doesn't have a lip. So as you age, you can move the wheelchair into it. Herman Miller, the office manufacturer, they do a lot of things with lighting and doorknobs and handles on shelves. And they're all done in a way that it's easier for an aging hand. But guess what? Turns out what's good for old people is good for young people.
And is also good design. Chris has a fancy title, but let's just call him the marketplace maven of econ. Chris Farrell, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And in the latest journal, Nature, peer-reviewed behavioral economics research suggesting that the culture of banking makes employees more prone to telling lies. University of Zurich researchers tried this with other professions, but it was the financial services people where the lying went up after the subjects were asked to reflect for a moment about the work they do. Researchers suggest maybe getting rid of financial rewards for dishonesty would help. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.